So see, Dave knows me for 10 years and he's still letting me up here. That says something. So I do need notes. I'm not as fluid as Dave is, a little rusty here. So, you know, I'll be doing this. I'll be looking down and I'll be looking up. So just so you know what's going to happen. And I'd like to tell you a story about something that happened to me. It was one of those rare Saturday afternoons. The house was quiet. There was nothing urgent on the honey-do list. Guys, right, you know how that goes, right? I had a few hours to myself. So I pick up the TV remote. I start looking around. Nothing. At least on the usual channels, you know, the usual channels that you go to. So, you know, you go to the B channels, right? Like Nat Geo, the Science Channel, you know, one of those, right? And I stop on a channel, and there in front of me is Neil deGrasse Tyson. You guys kind of sort of know who he is, right? He's like this TV personality, but he's also a pretty famous physicist. And he knows a lot, and he speaks a lot. And one of the things that he's really well known for is trying to make science, physics, you know, this really extreme stuff easy to understand. So there he is on TV. You know, I stop on that channel. You know, he's talking about black holes, and he's talking about gravity, and he's talking about relativity, you know, and he's talking about all of these different things, right? So, you know, so far so good. I'm watching it for about 5 minutes, and, you know, he's talking about these things, and he starts introducing the topics. And then, you know, it starts getting a little bit more hairy, you know, and it's like I'm listening to him, and I'm like, you know, this stuff is supposed to be easy to understand, right? You know, and he starts going into the fact that there are 11 dimensions, or physicists think that there are 11 dimensions, and, you know, how these things all interrelate, and the mathematics of it, and, well, the next slide, you know, so 20 minutes, it's just getting a little bit more difficult. And he's talking about whether time travel is possible, and, you know, and then 30 minutes, I had to turn off the TV and go do something safe like mow the lawn. So, any event. The really sad thing about all of this, by the way, is you know that on these TV programs, they're really just kind of dumbing it down, right? You know, but it's difficult to understand. So if you've been around church for any length of time, you've probably heard a couple of messages about time. And the messages are usually along the lines of how to use your time. Right? Or how to redeem your time. That's really not where I'm going with this morning. I do want to make a few points about the universe and about time itself, but the purpose of today's message is really nothing more than to provoke some thought and to provide you with some perspective, possibly some alternate perspective, with those significant challenges that sometimes arise in life. We call them trials. So we're not going to solve world hunger. We're not going to talk about, you know, how to solve world peace or anything like that. We're not going to go into the specifics of trials or anything like that. But we're going to try to gain some perspective about trials. So let's have some fun with this. I can't comprehend 11 dimensions. Some days I can barely feel coordinated in 3 dimensions. But apparently we exist in 4 dimensions. Or so says my nemesis, Neil deGrasse Tyson. We're going to run the video next. As he explains space-time, I have a short video here of Neil deGrasse Tyson explaining space-time to none other than Captain Kirk.
What is space-time? You already know. You have never met someone at a place unless it was also at a tournament. You have never met someone at a tournament unless it was also at a tournament. Wait a minute. What happens to a photon from 13,800,000,000 years that comes this way and enters my eye so I can see it? Where's space involved in that?
It entered your eye at a time and at a place, right here. That's all that matters. Once you have formalized space and time and know that they're conjoined, then you can make all kinds of fascinating calculations.
Well, what is all that? The train's going, I'm walking down there, I'm walking down the train. What is all that?
That's all the consequences of thinking about space and time as conjoined.
But that's confusing.
The universe is under no obligation to make sense to William Shatner.
Okay. No, but William Shatner is under the obligation to make sense of the universe, as is you are doing. And why do I slow down as I approach the speed of light? It doesn't apply to a photon.
Now you want to freak out. I want your head to explode. You ready?
Yeah.
Okay.
I'm ready.
Okay. The faster you go, the slower time it takes.
Say that again.
The faster you move.
Yeah.
Slower time takes for you, as seen by others.
Right.
As you approach the speed of light, time continues to slow down.
Yes.
At the speed of light, time stops. Which means for a photon moving at the speed of light, when it is absorbed in your retina, it is the same instant it was emitted at the Big Bang 14 billion years ago.
That's what I thought.
It's in your, as far as it's concerned, it is in your eye in that same
instant. Can we measure that photon and observe the Big Bang?
I know that that came from the Big Bang. I'm watching it, and it's taken 13.8 billion years to reach you, but if you are that photon, it does not experience that time delay.
What a great science fiction story.
Instantaneous.
Okay, so I hope nobody's drooling and nobody lost it on that. But maybe, and this other program that I watched, it was like my head exploded. Okay, so sometime after I watched that program and I dared to think about it again, I started to think about just how we human beings are bound up in time as well as space. You know, the word that's Neil deGrasse Tyson, by the way, right? That time and space are conjoined. That was the word that he used. That's how they put it on the video. It is conjoined to our physical three dimensions. And that's about as science-y as we're going to get here today, all right? We take that for granted because it's woven into our existence. And, of course, we can't control time. We can control how we move through time, right? We can go up, we can go down, we could go left, we could go right, we can go forward, we can go backward. And I had never really thought of it before, that time is a part of the creation, right? It's not something that's just there. We don't think about it a lot, but it is not something that's just there. The first words in the Bible, "In the beginning, God created." Now, that's a mouthful. It's not something that was done haphazardly. It was done with planning. It was done with thought. God designed, he planned, he executed. He created everything, the heavens and the earth. Now, if you believe that, and you accept that space and time are conjoined, right? Well, we'll take the word of Neil deGrasse Tyson for now. If you believe that and you accept that, you have to conclude that Father is not subject to time. He designed and he created it along with the rest of the universe. Just think about that for a moment. We exist in this, call it, four-dimensional box called space-time. God does not. And as sometimes happens, when you read something in the Bible, you may read it dozens or even hundreds of times, and then something jumps out at you. Isaiah, in a very long passage, makes this what I consider to be a very profound statement. And this was an epiphany for me. You know, that God says of himself, I am the high and lofty one who inhabits eternity. Right? Consider those words. As I understand it, space-time started with the Big Bang. Not the TV show, of course, right? But God is present at the moment of the Big Bang, and his existence, indeed, when you think about it, fills up, inhabits eternity. And God exists outside of this space-time bubble. So here's the basic point. Father controls time, not the other way around. He is not held captive by it or manipulated by it. He surrounds it and he fills it up. But us, family, we know all too well that we are subject to time. Just about everything that we say or do is with respect to time. We may not be consciously thinking about it all of the time, but Father, who is the great I Am, who exists outside of our four-dimensional universe, he says of himself as well, next slide, my thoughts are not your thoughts, neither are your ways my ways. For as high as the heavens are above the earth, so are my ways higher and my thoughts than your thoughts. Another translation, an alternate translation. I don't think the way you think. The way you work isn't the way I work. For as the sky soars high above the earth, so the way I work surpasses the way you work, and the way I think is beyond the way you think. So I submit to you, I propose to you, time is not something that Father passively experiences the way that we do. Think about how you experience time. When you do something that you like to do, time flies, right? The old expression, time flies when you're having fun. Time can be a friend. We all enjoy the fact that we have time to spend with our families. We have time to do the things that we like to do, the things that fill us up. We like to have time for our education. That's a good thing, that we can take time to find out what we like, the things that we're good at, and then take that forward in our lives. Time can also be a foe, like when you're late for something. Isn't that an awful feeling, especially if you totally forgot something? You know, it's like, oh, man, I had that dentist appointment, you know, and you're rushing out the door and you're going to try to get there on time and, you know, you're on the road and you're using your cell phone when you're not and you're saying, oh, I'm on my way, I'm just going to be a little bit late. And time is usually a particularly thorny factor when we enter into a challenging period that we call a trial. I think we all accept that trials come. But isn't the worst part of a trial how long they can last? When I see someone that's holding up really well and they're kind of going through something like a sickness or a family situation or anything over an extended period of time, and they're kind of dealing with it, and they're holding up, it's really encouraging. It's more common to see signs of increasing stress, especially when the trial is dragging on. And when we're stuck in a trial, It's those negative emotions that we have to deal with, right? They tend to become magnified. It's things like, you know, you might feel a little helpless, or you might feel a little hopelessness, you know, just to name a few things. And the longer the duration, the more intense those feelings can become. And it can be crushing. King David called it the valley of the shadow of death. You're not actually dead, of course, but the situation is still taking its toll upon you. Maybe you're a younger person. Maybe you've only seen somebody going through a difficult time. Or maybe you have experienced a really difficult situation yourself. Don't you just want to hit the fast forward button when you're in a situation like that? But unfortunately, our trials are not on DVR. We can't skip through the YouTube commercial and get to the part that we want to get to, just to get to the end of it. You can't control how long a situation will continue, but what you can do and what you can know is that Father is in control of all aspects of the situation, yes, including time. Now, Dave has been sharing some of his recent personal experiences with us. And most importantly, some of the advice and some of the practices and some of the things that he did that helped him. Those are things that I hope we can really, really take to heart. So the things that he's been describing to us were and are, if you will, an exercise in perspective. Either having the right perspective to start with, or maybe being able in a pinch, in a moment, to change your perspective. The gratitude journal, the walks, you know, doing things that fill you up and help bring some happiness and some joy to you. Those are things that contributed for him and can for all of us to refocus, change our focus, and to gain the perspective that we need. The middle of a lengthy difficulty or trial in your life would be the hardest time to try to change your perspective or to have a different perspective. Your emotions are heightened, and appeals from those around us sometimes fall or tend to fall on deaf ears. We can easily become sucked into a downward spiral from which it can be difficult to emerge. But we can emerge. We can emerge. And if that renewal, if that emergence comes from within, it's so much the better, right? Because it's something that's already inside of you. If you're grounded in gratitude, for example, it's much easier to summon up that feeling when you're getting crunched. And today, what we're doing, what I'd like to do, is add a very simple and a very powerful truth to your toolkit that will help you when, sorry guys, it's not a question of if, it's really a question of when you find yourself in the thick of it, when something overtakes you, when you're in the middle of a trial, and you're sitting there wondering when or even if it will end. You can have these perspectives. Father created and is in control of time. That's where we started. Father knows when your situation will be resolved. Because he's not under any time constraints. All trials end. Only sometimes not the way we would like. And quite often, not as quickly as we would want. Family, I think that perspective can make a huge difference and change and provide us with the support and the way out. It has to be the hardest thing to do for a human being is to change your perspective when you're under the gun or when you're suffering. Good. Now, I can't ignore that we're having Christmas in July. I have to say, I love this graphic. I absolutely love this graphic. I would never have thought of building a snowman out of sand under the beach. I think this is just really, really great. So let's have some more fun. Now, the next bit is a bit of a digression, but let's call it an exercise, an application in changing perspective. Now, the intention of Christmas is to memorialize the single most important moment in time. Eh? The incarnation of God in the person of Jesus. Next. In the beginning was the Word. The Word became flesh, and he made his dwelling among us. Have you ever considered that Jesus literally, essentially, downgraded his existence? The Word became flesh and dwelt among us. And that what Jesus did was the ultimate act of love, that he downgraded his existence and became God in the flesh. What was that like? We're going to run the next video now, Ben. What could that have possibly been like? We're going to go to a place called Flatland and watch the adventure of a little guy that I call 2D.
We live in a three-dimensional world where everything has length, width, and height. But what if our world were two-dimensional? We would be squashed down to occupy a single plane of existence, geometrically speaking, of course. And what would that world look and feel like? This is the premise of Edwin Abbott's 1884 novella, Flatland. Flatland is a fun mathematical thought experiment that follows the trials and tribulations of a square exposed to the third dimension. But what is a dimension anyway? For our purposes, a dimension is a direction, which we can picture as a line. For our direction to be a dimension, it has to be at right angles to all other dimensions. So a one-dimensional space is just a line. A two-dimensional space is defined by two perpendicular lines, which describe a flat plane, like a piece of paper. And a three-dimensional space adds a third perpendicular line, which gives us height and the world we're familiar with. So what about four dimensions, and five, and 11? Where do we put these new perpendicular lines? This is where Flatland can help us. Let's look at our square protagonist's world. Flatland is populated by geometric shapes, ranging from isosceles triangles to equilateral triangles to squares, pentagons, hexagons, all the way up to circles. These shapes are all scurrying around a flat world, living their flat lives. They have a single eye on the front of their faces, and let's see what the world looks like from their perspective. What they see is essentially one dimension, a line. But in Abbott's Flatland, closer objects are brighter, and that's how they see depth. So a triangle looks different from a square, looks different from a circle, and so on. Their brains cannot comprehend the third dimension. In fact, they vehemently deny its existence because it's simply not part of their world or experience. But all they need, as it turns out, is a little boost. One day, a sphere shows up in Flatland to visit our square hero. Here's what it looks like when the sphere passes through Flatland from the square's perspective. And this blows his little square mind. Then, the sphere lifts the square into the third dimension, the height direction where no Flatlander has gone before, and shows him his world. From up here, the square can see everything. The shapes of buildings, all the precious gems hidden in the earth, and even the insides of his friends, which is probably pretty awkward. Once the hapless square comes to terms with the third dimension, he begs his host to help him visit the fourth and higher dimensions. But the sphere bristles at the mere suggestion of dimensions higher than three and exiles the square back to Flatland. Now, the sphere's indignation is understandable. The fourth dimension is very difficult to reconcile with our experience of the world.
Okay, it gets kind of science-y after this, but I think that's enough to make the point. So, when I realized that God was not subject to time, for me, it was an equally big epiphany that Jesus, who existed with Father before time began, willingly entered space-time and became God in the flesh, what we commonly call Christmas, yeah? This is like riding in first class and being demoted to coach. Actually, I think it's worse than that. I think it's like riding in first class and then being strapped to the wing outside the plane. But it's the ultimate act of love. In the beginning was the Word. God so loved the Word, the world. And then we know also that Jesus was able to return to the Father. The story has a happy ending. See, we all easily recognize that Jesus' earthly existence ended with his sacrifice, but it also started with a huge sacrifice. And Jesus was very happy to say, hours before he would be punished and crucified like no other human being had ever been before him, "Father, glorify me in your presence with the glory that I had before the world began." Now, did that alter your perception of Christmas and the incarnation at all, just a little bit? Let's face it, December is one of the busiest months of the year, preparing for Christmas. But buried somewhere in all of that hustle and bustle can be the remembrance of that pivotal moment in time when God himself entered our four-dimensional bubble known as space-time in the person of Jesus Christ. And I submit to you that in times of trial, having this perspective can be and would be an anchor that can help us weather the storm. Just like the song said, we get called out upon the waters, the waves rise, but I will call upon your name. I will keep my eyes above the waves. Paul understood this. Paul was a man with focus. Paul was a man with perspective. From everything that we know about him, he was just single-minded, always thinking about the gospel, moving from one place to another place, right? Paul went through so many trials. He writes a little bit about it in 2 Corinthians, and I've just pulled a couple of little snippets out. But Paul really got put through the ringer. He wrote, at one point, "We were under great pressure, far beyond our ability to endure, so that we despaired of life itself. Indeed, we felt that we had received the sentence of death." You know, he talks in this chapter about spending a night and a day in a deep. He talks about being lashed 39 times, I think it was three times. See, the Jews and the authorities of the day, they had this thing that if you were lashed 40 times, you could never be lashed again. So they would always stop, you know, with their political opponents. They would stop at 39 so that they could do it again if they wanted to. You know, so Paul talks about all of these different things that he had to endure. But he says, this happened that we might not rely on ourselves, but on God who raises the dead. You know, and he goes on and he describes a lot of different things in the chapter. And then you get a little later, up to chapter 4, he makes this point. We fix our eyes not on what is seen, but on what is unseen. Since what is seen is, note, temporary, but what is unseen is eternal. Family, my time for this message is nearing its end. I mentioned at the beginning that the purpose of today's message was to simulate some thought. So here's the takeaway. We cannot see from Father's perspective, but we intuitively know that he is unlimited. We trust in Father's love, and to know that his purpose for each one of us can never be thwarted because time ran out. He is not in a race with anyone or anything. And that's another whole ginormous topic by itself. I want to encourage you to spend a bit of time now thinking about how you perceive Father, how you perceive yourself, how you perceive your circumstances, because when you're in the middle of something difficult, the hardest thing to do is to change your perception and reset your focus. So now we need a practice, right? We've had practices. Dave is stingy. He's just given you one each week. I have a few ideas for you. Look back on a difficult situation that you've gone through. Think about it. Some of us, sadly, may not have to think or dig too deeply for that. But think back on something that was really stressful. And it came to a resolution, no matter what the resolution was. Does the pain fade over time? Sometimes it does. Sometimes it doesn't. Some things change us, and some things are with us for a long time. But think back and consider something that happened to you and how it was resolved, but more importantly, that it was resolved. And if a harsh experience hasn't occurred yet in your life, hasn't yet reduced you to the fetal position, here's something else that you can try, and this is really easy. Fast for a day. Go without food for a day. Okay? Now, fasting, again, is a very large topic. But it's something that starts, and it's something that ends. And when it ends, you can go back into a normal pattern. You take in that food. You feel better. Right? There's the old expression, the old joke, about the man who was banging his head against the wall. And when he was asked, why do you bang your head against the wall? He said, well, it feels so good when I stop. Fasting is a little bit like that, and it can teach us a lot of different things. It shows us that we're finite in time, but if you fast and then you end the fast, you just feel, you eat that food again, and you just feel a whole lot better. Next slide, Ben. Paul put it this way. Eye is not seen, nor ear heard, nor is it entered into the heart of man, the things which God has prepared for those who love him. I have one more practice for you. Keep going. Keep going. Someone once asked a man how he was. He replied, I'm going through hell. His friend told him, well, keep going. That is no place to stop. If you seem to be going through the deep waters of physical anguish and cannot for the moment seem to gain the understanding which binds the strong man, keep on going. Keep clinging to the truth and hear again the comforting, strengthening message. My grace is sufficient. God divine is love, eternally sustaining his child, and will bind the power of pain as surely as the summer sun will melt the stubborn frost. Keep going. Please join me in prayer. Father, thank you so much for everything you do. Thank you for leading us through and for not giving us more than we can handle and for telling us over and over again that you have nothing but the very best in mind for every single one of your children, past, present, and future. Thanks for being here with us today and transcending space and time. You are truly awesome. Jesus, thank you. We are so grateful to you for your deeds, for your sacrifice, first by entering into our space-time and all the things that you did and suffered through, which give us our hope for the future. We thank you and praise you both. And it's through your name, Jesus, that we call the great God, the great I Am, Father. Amen.